والسلام على من لا نبي بعده. أما بعد، فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. اليوم أكملت لكم دينكم وأتممت عليكم نعمتي ورضيت لكم الإسلام دينا. صدق الله العظيم. This day I have perfected for you your religion, and I have completed upon you my blessings, and I am pleased that Islam be the way of life for you. Respected ulama, respected brothers, respected mothers and sisters listening to us on the internet, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I have limited time and I have quite an amount of material to share with you, so I should go straight into the issues that relate to the Terrorism Act 2000. And I hope that many of you will have had the opportunity to read up on this and look into it. I'd like to say from the outset that as Muslims residing in the UK, many of us being British subjects, British citizens rather, we are not terrorists. We are law-abiding British citizens, because that is exactly what our faith requires of us, to respect the laws of the land that we reside in. We were not responsible for Oklahoma, nor are we responsible for New York. But you might say, but hold on, Oklahoma was different, and New York is different. Because in New York, all the fingers are pointing towards Muslims. And so it is the Muslim and it is Islam that is propagating terrorism. And I ask you, most of us will have learned as part of our history lessons in school, the Second World War came about because of one single individual and his vision of a supreme race and his desire of executing a policy of Lebensraum, meaning more living room for this supreme race. And I refer to Adolf Hitler, who was a Christian. Yet there is no one that has condemned Christianity as a whole or the Christians as a whole for the acts of this individual. So why should that be the case with Muslims and with Islam? We have unreservedly condemned what happened in New York. And indeed we welcome all legislation that protects British citizens and human beings worldwide. But it should not reflect adversely on Muslims. If you examine this act, you will feel that it is actually made out for you. We believe that legislation, any kind of legislation that involves different communities, should bring about unity, should bring about harmony in society between the different communities. And it should not alienate one single community. It should not cause one community to become a target, as we have seen post September 11, how we, the Muslim community, have become targets. And it should especially not cause hatred. And you know the word that is used today. The Americans are very good at coming up with catchy words and catchy phrases. Islamophobia, the fear of the Muslim. What is there to fear a Muslim? We're all about peace. Our faith talks about peace. Islam stems from peace. But they like to call us Muslim and Islam. For those of you who are familiar with the Arabic language, will know that Islam, Muslim, are totally different things to Islam and Muslims. We see Islamophobia is rife in this country and worldwide. And quick fix type of legislation, as was or as is the Terrorism Act 2000, do not help at all. And those of you who have traveled recently, I traveled not very long ago, the moment you get onto an aeroplane with your imamah, with your sunnah and your long shirt, you see the faces becoming worried in the aeroplane. Why are you worried? We are flying in the same aeroplane as you are, yet people become worried. It's this fear of Islam and Muslims. You can have a good laugh now, but inshallah in a few minutes, I'm going to ask ourselves to examine ourselves. What role we have played in bringing about that scenario? Many of you will have heard of an incident where a group of Muslims, peace-loving people, who wanted to travel to other parts of the world with this message of peace, this message of tranquility, they boarded an aeroplane. And do you know what? The other passengers, the non-Muslim passengers, refused to fly on that aeroplane. We will not fly whilst these people are on board this aircraft. It didn't stop there. Look at the injustice of what this act can bring about. Because all you have to do now, if you want to target Muslims, is fall back on this act. And you are covered. That group of Muslims were made to disembark and get down from the aircraft. And the aeroplane left without them. And that is the kind of legislation that we Muslims would raise our voice against, whilst remaining within the parameters of the law of this land. We do not wish to break any laws. But our government has to take into account our feelings and our worries and our concerns, which are very real and not superficial in the least. So, what is the problem? Islam is the problem. And shall I tell you, Islam, the Islamic problem, is such an issue for Western governments that it was actually on the agenda of the G8 summit a few years ago. The Islamic problem as an item on the agenda. Now the effects of this act, how does it affect you and I? We've had people from the special branch, call it MI5, MI6, who have been making calls on Muslims, especially those who adhere to the Sunnah way of dress, and who are trying to bring about a revival in the Muslims, especially the Muslim youth. Adhere to your faith teachings. Be good people, be good citizens, be honest people, be decent people. Special branch officers. In fact, they are, perhaps in a way you could say, they don't even have the guts to approach the individuals that they want to question. They have been asking about my learned teacher and guide, about Sheikh Yusuf. They've been asking about him to some people in Bolton. You know that man? Can you tell us more about him? What is he all about? What wrong has he done? If he has carried out any illegal activities, charge him. Make him stand on trial and sentence him accordingly. But an innocent person who goes about his business is being harassed like this indirectly. Ulama are being targeted. And I'll share with you what a friend of mine said to me. Officers from the special branch knocked on his door one day in one of our Midland cities. And they said, we would like to interview you in relation to this terrorism act, etc. And said, why do you want to interview me? What reasons do you have to want to question me? And they came up with a brilliant excuse. And the excuse was, well, we found your name in the mountains of Tora Bora in Afghanistan. Allahu Akbar. And I said to my friend, Mommy always told you, didn't she? Graffiti is no good. This alim is a very hard-working person. He wants to improve the situation of humanity at large, not just Muslims. He's a peaceful family man. He has never been to Afghanistan. Maybe he signed an autograph book for someone. Now, let me tell you something. Don't be surprised if there's a knock on your door. And you open the door and you find Mr. Bond himself standing there. And he will say to you, my name is Bond. Mr. Bond, James Bond. You say to him, and my name is Lost. Get lost. And they need to have a good reason to question you. Otherwise it is harassment, nothing less. Now let's look at it on a more serious note. I say we need to tackle this issue and all these issues that face the Muslim community in Britain. And we need to face them head on in a very intelligent manner and by means of well thought out long-term strategies. For example, the young people that I see here, you go on and study and work hard, acquire your qualifications and the things that you will need to promote yourself and as a result Islam within British society. Get the right type of education. Get the qualifications, for example, which will enable you to be elected into Parliament. Thus, inshallah, we can have a voice, a very small voice. It might be only a squeak at times, but it will cause ripples. And we need to oppose such acts as the Terrorism Act 2000, especially when they reflect adversely on the Muslim community. That's the long-term plan. Invest in our youth to lead us to the future. In the meantime, the short-term strategy is that we need a very, very strong political lobby. As other faith communities have, we must lobby our parliamentarians and those that represent us in the Houses of Westminster. And my humble appeal is to my fellow ulama, you need to be at the forefront. You need to be in the driving seat and lead your communities forward and be politically active. Look at your councils. How many Muslims are represented in the councillors that you have in your local council? How many of us? Let me put it to you very bluntly. We had elections not very long ago. Hands up those of you who took part. Go on, hands up. 1, 2, 3. I think I have enough fingers to count you on my hand. Is that the kind of interest we show? These are the people who are going to talk on our behalf where it matters. And yet we don't turn up to vote. If you look within your communities, you will find a Muslim candidate. The chairman of your masjid, for example. Why don't you put him down as your candidate for your local area? We have to be proactive. We cannot sit back and expect things to work out for us when we don't take control of things that are within easy reach of our control. How many of you are governors in schools? One, two, three, four, five, six. One in the end is seven. Again, I have enough fingers on my two hands to count you. Only seven school governors. And yet, we always talk about education and the importance of education. And I'll tell you what happens when Muslims do not take part in the schooling of their children. One of the local councils were having building work carried out on a school. Almost, I would say, it's 100% Muslim populated school. Building work is going on, health and safety regulations, I accept. What do you do with your pupils? Give them a 3-week holiday. So Muslim children are sitting at home 3 weeks holiday while their school is being built or renovated. If you had Muslim governors in that school, you could have stood up and said, hold on, 3 weeks. Do you know how many lessons that is and how much time that is? And our children are going to be deprived of an education throughout that period. You will have to house this elsewhere. Our children's education should not be interrupted. Continuity is very vital in education. So that is our kind of interest that we show. Start making time. Be involved in community projects, especially the schools which your children attend. And approach things diplomatically, tactfully, with wisdom. Consult your ulama. Let us look at the race issue. Racism, a big problem, huge problem. Only a few days ago we heard of the black postal worker who committed suicide because of being bullied at his workplace, because of his skin color. We need to work at strategies of tackling this problem. Look at the rise of right-wing and fascist groups throughout Europe. Look at the BNP, the British National Party, who have openly demanded for Muslims to be thrown out of the UK. How are we going to tackle this if we don't engage in mainstream politics and activities? We have to engage with mainstream. We cannot isolate ourselves, ghettoize ourselves, and be happy and content with our own little communities. And we need to look at racial discrimination laws. They are certainly inadequate. And for your attention, let me bring it to your attention that a special House of Lords Select Committee has been set up to look into religious offences. And we would like this committee to take into account the fact that there must be a comprehensive law that prohibits discrimination on grounds of religion. All those people who made that group of Muslims get off the aeroplane should be taken to task, I would say. There must be a law that makes it an offense to incite religious hatred. It doesn't cover Muslims. And that means people who incite hatred against Muslims because of their faith will face prosecution. There must be a law that enforces respect for all religions and beliefs. Presently, the law on blasphemy covers only Christianity, and it does not cover the other faiths. And we believe as Muslims that this is unfair and discriminatory and leaves Islam and its followers vulnerable. If you have the time, in fact, make the time, write to the clerk, to the committee. His name is Mr. McLeay. And you can write to the Select Committee on Religious Offences straight to the House of Lords in London. I'm sure you'll be able to access the address for that. Now, we mentioned about isolating ourselves and being happy within our own communities. You've heard of another catchphrase, integration. The Muslims, and this is a statement that came out through Mr. Peter Haynes, who accused, firstly, the whole Muslim community of alienating themselves and not integrating. And then he turned around and he said, some Muslims do not integrate well within British society. So I would say to Mr. Haynes, what do you exactly want us to do to prove that we are integrating? See, we come back to that point. How many of us voted? How many of us are governors in schools? And so many other examples. How many of us have gone down to the local hospital and said, we, the Muslim community, would like to donate a hospital bed? And put a little label, they say, a gift from the Muslim community. Little things that matter so much. It's planning, it's strategy. It's called image improving techniques. We have to improve our image. We are part and parcel of British society and we want to contribute positively. Great Britain, the UK is a multicultural, multi-faith society. If Muslims give up their way of life, and so does everybody else, and we all become the same, we stop being multicultural, we become monocultural. And that is not rich. Britain today is rich because of its diversity and what other communities have contributed to make it strong. And we're not only talking about chicken tikka masala. There is much more than that. Muslims have contributed and we want to continue to contribute. Give us the opportunity. Look at unemployment. Look how Muslims are doing in education. Bottom of the rung. Unemployment, probably the highest in the Muslim community. We have to get together and sort out this mess that we find our community in. In order to understand all this, I feel it is important for me to share with you the historical background of the indigenous people, the natives of this land. Not a phrase that I like to use, become uncomfortable with that, but that is how you describe native peoples of any place on earth. If you look back at the history, you find that this land has historically been devoid of the light of Islam. The society and the communities of Britain from the beginning have always been non-Muslim. Until a time came when Christianity came to these lands. But that is now forsaken. It is a mixture of all sorts. And you find where there is monotheism, there is also polytheism mixed with it. Extremism and fundamentalism with their religion. Yes, don't be surprised. Extremism, fundamentalism, the Muslims don't have a copyright to that. You can use it for others also who abuse their faith teachings to the detriment of others. So extremism and fundamentalism within Christianity led many people to believe that the chosen messenger of Allah, Sayyidina Isa alayhi salam, was the Son of God. They gave up belief in the hereafter. They turned back to the polytheistic past. They regarded religion to be a curse and began to follow their man-made laws. Religious law was gradually replaced by laws made by religious leaders, which were later replaced by irreligious laws. And that early religion now has almost no influence on the people here. The distance from Allah's true religion was further increased by the Crusades, 1,000-fold. And this distance from the true religion of Allah resulted and turned into hatred and prejudice against Islam and Muslims. That's the background. That's where they're coming from. All this was followed by a storm of atheistic philosophy, which gave birth to a material worshipping society. This was the age of the Industrial Revolution. Wealth from around the world, looted or hard-earned, came to this country. And its influence, British influence, soon spread around the globe. This made them very proud and arrogant of the deviation from religion. And almost everything they were proud of, to a great extent, was contrary to and against the pure teachings of Islam. Now, during this time, many Muslim lands were conquered and remained under the rule of these people. The conqueror felt no respect for the Muslim. Memories of the Crusades and the resulting animosity and hatred was rekindled. And we, the Muslims, were affected by their rule so much that not only were we the conquered people, but we were also overrode by them. Their law changed and transformed beyond recognition our own way of life. Their education system corrupted our own, and their imposing culture not only changed our behavior, but entered our homes and still is entering, and corrupted the very foundations of our culture. In this era of occupation, whichever one of the Muslims was more influenced by the British culture made just as more progress. They were able to go up the ladder quicker than those that resisted. However, I feel it is the student contingent that came to Britain to study, and that was totally influenced by what we now term as Western culture. It is these students who in turn went back to their countries and became leaders because they were educated. And through this way, you could say by the back door, Westernization of Muslims took root within their own countries by their own people. With the coming of the Second World War, British supremacy came to an end. However, the irony is that the influence that they had on Muslim lands still continues, if not it has become stronger. And of course, wherever there is a deficiency, America is always there to fill in the gaps. Now, what is my responsibility and your responsibility? And what role can we play in Britain as British citizens, as Muslims who have made this our home? What can we do? You've just seen the background of the people with whom we share this country. I would like you to ponder over what has been said so far. And you need to reconsider your position as a Muslim community resident permanently in the United Kingdom. What responsibility do we have towards not only ourselves and fellow Muslims, but just as importantly, towards the indigenous non-Muslim community? We have now become part and parcel of British society. Ask yourself, what impression have you created in the minds of the British people? When they see you, do they feel safe and secure? Do they feel at peace? Or when they see you, they want to leave the airplane? Ask yourself. Let me draw your attention to a few important issues. First and foremost, we must preserve and safeguard our values, our faith, our customs and our culture. This is because there exists around us a very powerful culture and society, one from whose influence we are not immune, even in our own original countries, wherever we came from. And if we are in the least bit negligent of this fact, then we'll be absorbed by Western culture and eventually lose our true identity. When that happens, then even racial identities will not protect us from being absorbed. Therefore, we need to prepare all the means necessary to preserve our Muslim identity so that we can bring about unity amongst British Muslims. We need to give up infighting over petty issues and create an awareness of being one ummah and nation. Those who have gone onto the wrong path, we must look after them, bring them back onto the straight and narrow. We must put a stop to the rot that has set in society. We need to create a love for Islam in the hearts of Muslims and non-Muslims, not only through education, propagation, but through other means. Perhaps we could create a group of Muslims that is professionally organized and understands the dilemma of British Muslims trying to live a life of Islam in Britain. The second issue, which is no less important, is of our offspring and our children, and of our future generations. They are born here, educated here. It is difficult yet vital to safeguard their identity. It is difficult because all around them there is a strong and very appealing and influential Western culture. If we are not able to unite ourselves and collectively set up systems and mechanisms of safeguarding their Islam and the Islam of future generations, maybe you and I, and just maybe, we might be able to scrape through, but our progeny will not be so fortunate. This question needs our immediate and undivided attention. And I'd urge all capable and professional British Muslims to get together and help in the areas where you have the expertise. Apart from these two issues, which are of paramount importance for the future of Muslims in Britain, there are other issues which are just as important. And we have, through the mercy of Allah, an opportunity to demonstrate to the non-Muslim British people what Islam is. You've got to believe me, whether we accept it or not, they judge Islam by our actions. Everything you and I do, to them, that is Islam. Indeed, they cannot be blamed for that. After all, we are the ambassadors of Islam. And every strong point about us is regarded as a strong point about Islam. And the opposite is just as true. Let not a single one of us think that his life and actions are his or her personal and private affair. They are not. Remember, our actions are the yardstick by which people will judge Islam. Ask yourself, are we demonizing Islam by our actions? If we are, then we are all potential terrorists out to destroy the pure image of Islam. If each one of us can convince himself or herself that he or she is truly an ambassador of Islam, then surely we will think twice before we do anything that will bring Islam into disrepute. We'll make sure that everything we do portrays Islam in good light. When that happens, you can be sure that people will start taking Islam seriously and will want to know more. They will see the clear difference between Islam and their culture. Remember, the more we become like them, the less distinctive we become. Eventually, there will be no difference between a British Muslim and a British non-Muslim. And think about it. If we are the same as them, then why would they want to change to Islam? Look at India, for example, and I'll be very brief. The British ruled India for decades, yet they did not change their ways. They remained very British, and they changed us. Although we disliked and detested their habits, they persevered. They were steadfast. In the end, we failed to challenge them, and they changed us. Had they succumbed and given up, they would have melted like salt in the melting pot that India is. But it is an undisputed fact that it is the powerful that molds the weak ones, and not vice versa. People who are embarrassed and ashamed of their own identity, who change their appearance when they interact with others, their dress and other habits are altered to enable them to fit in. When such people do this, the others immediately know that these are weak people and that they suffer from an inferiority complex. How then can we expect non-Muslims to adopt our ways when we ourselves are ashamed of our ways? And why should we expect them to believe that we too have something valuable to contribute positively to their corrupt societies? If we really want to be ambassadors of Islam, then we will first of all have to build a very strong Islamic character for ourselves. We need to assert our uniqueness in the way we dress, talk, socialize, and so forth. Let us carry out our religious obligations openly, with pride and dignity. Let us face every obstacle with strength and courage. With regard to the things that Islam prohibits, let us abstain from them. Let us wholeheartedly practice Islam. And when our way of life differs from the Western way of life, then let us not be afraid and give up our ways, but rather be steadfast and prove that our way of life, al-Islam, is the best and the only way of life suitable for humanity. Let us build ourselves in ourselves a character, such a character, and we make our dealings of such a nature that people around us will see the clear difference and will be attracted to our way of life. When we interact with the wider society, when we observe our Muslim practices, questions will arise. People will ask us, why pray five times? Why fast? Why cover your hair? Why cover your face? And so forth. This will give us a chance to learn more about our own faith and educate others about our faith. It will give us an opportunity to point out the ill effects and the disastrous effects of their so-called progress. And we can point out to them what they call backwardness is actually good for society. Some of you might think debate of this nature is futile. It will bring about no changes. But think again. The result will be total opposite. Because in every society there is a group of people that says, two wrongs do not make a right. It is up to you and I, those of us who are educated and not very educated, young and old, men and women, girls and boys, to get together and take this faith, this way of life which Allah has chosen for all of humanity forward, so that the success that you and I pray for in the hereafter is shared by every Muslim, every British citizen who is away from Islam. With these few words, I end, and I pray to Allah that He has enabled us to learn in the true spirit of the things that we've been trying to learn. وَصَلُّ اللَّهُ عَلَى النَّبِيِّ الْكَرِيمِ وَآخِرُ دَعْوَانَا أَنِ الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ